Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. I'm on location. I'm at my home and recovering from the hurricane. And since we don't have electricity or internet or my radio studio or telephones, I'm out on my cell phone, so please excuse the quality of the signal. But we've got a really original good show for you today. We're going to have two physicians on today. And these are two of the thousands of physicians that I've interviewed that are not known to the public. They're just regular board-certified physicians who are doing something remarkable, and that is they're curing diseases that they never believed you could cure using lifestyle modifications. And I'm going to have more people like this on just to show you that, hey, this is not quackery. In fact, during my long 45-year career, as a clinical nutritionist and a health advocate, I have met at least 20,000 of these individuals, homeopaths, holistic nurses, doctors, dentists, chiropractors, life coaches, dietitians. They're all contributing something positive to the question of why do we get sick? How can we stay well? Can we actually cure disease? And for decades, and I was just thinking about this morning, driving here to this parking lot where I have a signal where I can reach you, that when I first interviewed Linus Pauling, the people in my audience were very open to the idea of using higher doses of vitamin C. But the mainstream public was not. And the scientific community was not, even though he was our only new two-time Nobel Prize winner, shared Nobel Prize. Dr. Otto Warburg also won two Nobel Prizes. And then Dr. Ellis, who was talking about the remarkable effects of B6. And I was interviewing different people, Dr. William Shute, the Shute brothers out of Canada, who were curing heart disease with high doses of vitamin E. I mean real high doses, depending upon the condition, as high as 3,000 units, when they were working individually one-on-one with patients. And they had the proof of it. So when I did my first conference in 1975 that I sponsored at the Waldorf, I brought in 12 of the people who were curing diseases, but they were all using individual therapies. And I'm thinking at that time, when I'm listening to these great men and women, if they're able to reverse disease with a single nutrient, what would happen if you use large nutrients? And I never will forget, Linus Pauling and I had dinner, and I suggested to him, why didn't he look at the other nutrients by the other individuals? And he just kind of shrugged his shoulders. It was like, no, I'm not interested. And it was only after the PBS special Forever, which, by the way, was the most successful up to that point and since by an individual in their history. And it was relatively simple. And you have to ask, well, what in the world caused the doors to come down with that Pedal It Forever? And it was that it gave people an understanding that health is actually very, very simple. You make the right choices on your exercise. And you remember, I was showing people how to power walk around that little stage, and then I showed them the connection to stress, disease, food table, bad food table, really basic mentoring. Anyone in this audience right now listening who's listened for more than 2 years could have done the same lecture. And anyone who's listened longer could even have done a more comprehensive lecture. But to the American public, it was all brand new. But here's what you don't know, and I've never discussed. What happened was that they kept me on the road for almost 50 days. I didn't even have a change of underwear. I had nothing. I'd done one show down in Miami, and suddenly I'm all over the United States. And I'd go into, you know, stores and buy clothes because a shirt, a tie, I had nothing. But I just kept doing one in the afternoon and one at night and one in the morning. It was like 2 to 3 a day. And Bob Marty, who had produced this, said, we've never seen a phenomenon like this. I don't understand why. Nor did I at the time. But later I figured it out. Because what happened over the next year, about 3,000 scientists and physicians contacted me and saying, we did the same thing. What do you mean? We're curing patients. How are you doing it? Well, the things you talk about, Nothing fancy, nothing magical. There's no alchemy here. We're putting people on healthy diets and they're getting well, becoming diseases. But we were afraid to say anything because every single doctor and nurse in America and dentist is aware if you do not abide by the current paradigm, you could lose your license to practice medicine. But you were on, you know, the most respected TV stations in the country, TBS, and so we figured, hey, you get all this results and you're playing all over the place, then maybe it's time we came out of the closet. So that opened the door to other people coming forward. Now, that was 18 years ago, almost 19 years ago. So now we have 88,000 or almost 10% of all medical practitioners who are familiar with or in some way using the same information. I believe in the next 2 years we will see a paradigm shift, one that will be the largest seismic shift in the history of all of healthcare, where a plant-based healthy diet, exercise, and stress management, detoxification become just common and acceptable practices. So today we're going to continue on. I have coming up in a moment Dr. Thomas Campbell, medical doctor, and Dr. Lancaster, and you'll hear from them. Oh, by the way, good news. I was informed yesterday that we actually reached and exceeded our goal. So good news. All of the premiums, 100% of the premiums, over $160,000 worth of premiums that went to the station are all paid for. All the station has to do is just get the books and the DVDs and the CDs and mail them out. And I know we have an outstanding group of volunteers at the station to help with that. But that is good news because it means that all of you in the spring drive who helped our sister station, WBAI in New York, where I've been for nearly 41 years, you're going to get your premiums. And even what was left over, I am advocating other producers let us know so we can get those premiums out to your audience as well. So not only have we succeeded, we've exceeded our expectations. Now, that is not a good model. It is a failed model. It's good that everyone's getting it. It's good that the station got to make over $140,000 and keep it all. It's not good that I have to go out then and do all the work and get a crew of 20 and put thousands of hours into making all that happen. And so they have to change this model because then they become codependent on it and just enables them. Well, we'll make all the money and you go out and do all the work and pay all of our bills. That doesn't work for me. I'm doing it to help the station and its audience, not the management. I'm here to help us keep alive and to get, because if you don't give the money to the premiums, people are going to stop asking for the premiums. And we don't want that. We have a small enough audience at BAI to begin with. We want to try to rebuild it and get it back to where it's a viable and informed source of information as it should be. So, but that's good news. It's always good to get some good news. And that's good news. And there's no more room for full paying customers. It's all done. And now there is room for two work study, meaning your work, maybe helping in the kitchen, maybe helping outside, but then you also get to take in the classes throughout the day. Call Luann if you're interested in that, and you save $1,000 on that. 973-766-2214, 973-766-2214. And to give you an idea, I have to recalibrate my once I saw the full scale of everything, and one day when I have time, I'll tell you about where I kept all the animals. It was a funny thing because they were in the house, but they were protected because that house was built to withstand a Category 5 plus, over 170 mile an hour winds, no damage at all to humans, animals. But we can now use 6 football fields full of debris. That's how much debris there is. But 95% of all the trees are good condition, including the, we're even putting back in place a 55-foot Bismarck, a specimen tree, meaning one of the best of its kind in America. And I planted all these myself 22 years ago. And now we're getting in the bobcats and bulldozers, and as long as you got a root ball. By the way, for all of you in this audience, including people in Florida or Louisiana or Texas, if your trees blew over, as long as the root ball is still intact, don't cut it up. Get a bobcat, get straps, and pull it back into place. Then put 8 stakes around it, band it, stake it with heavy duty, ideally. Don't use 2x2s, use 4x4s, and backstop those with wood going about 4 feet in the ground so it backstops so the tree will stay supported. And within 3 to 4 months, the root system will reestablish itself. Then immediately, every week, put fish emulsion fertilizer around that ball, and that will help re-nourish it. It'll take 3 months to get out of the shock, but the energy of the tree goes into the root. Now, if the top of the tree goes brown and looks like it's dead, it's not dead. Trees will conserve the energy down into the root system. Nice talking with you all. Now the show.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We have a special hour presentation. This is a continuation of our Classroom on the Air, in-depth analysis of how a healthy lifestyle, which includes exercise and stress management, and a good quality plant-based diet wherever possible, helps both in the prevention as well as reversal of diseases. My guest to share us in this journey today is Dr. Thomas Campbell. He's in Rochester, New York. He's a medical doctor. He is the medical director of the T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies and the co-founder and clinical director of the University of Rochester's Program for Nutrition and Medicine, which is a groundbreaking, clinical-oriented approach to prevention and treatment of disease and illness through lifestyle and diet. He is also the co-author with his father, the renowned Cornell University nutritional biochemist Colin Campbell, of the famous China study, which gave their insights in clear and scientific evidence linking a meat-based diet to cancer and cardiovascular disease, among other conditions. Tom is a graduate of Cornell and received his medical degree from SUNY Buffalo School of Medicine. He is the author of The Campbell Plan, as well as The Simple Way to Lose Weight and Reverse Illness. And the Center for Nutrition Studies website is nutritionstudies.org, where articles on plant-based diet and its healthy benefits can be found. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's begin where most people don't, and that is, if you were to be the director of curriculum for all medical schools in the United States, what would you change that the conventional medical education and internship and residency focuses on now that you would like to see different influential factors, and then how did those factors later impact you?
Well, let me say that, medical training for me was a great learning experience. It's certainly full of tremendously interesting, useful information, but, that's sort of wall to wall, from morning to night, you're busy learning new information. One thing that's conspicuously absent, of course, is education about nutrition, diet and lifestyle more generally. And it's a shame because even the most conservative physicians out there, I mean, you ask anybody out there who sort of doesn't eat, people who don't even like food stuff or nutrition stuff, most physicians will acknowledge and recognize that people's health behaviors, whether they smoke, they exercise, what they eat, has a dramatic impact on the diseases that we treat, the vast majority of diseases we treat. The vast majority, and yet as medical professionals, we get almost no training in diet and lifestyle and in nutrition in particular. And that's a big problem because when we're trying to help patients get healthy and get well, We have to recognize that nutrition is a very important component of that, and right now the medical profession is kind of falling on that task.
Could you also explain what you believe is needed that isn't now provided, that limits a doctor's perspective of the cause of disease, as well as looking for more natural and non-toxic ways of treating disease?
Well, I think specifically, I mean, I think that we need to understand some of the research between nutrition and chronic disease. I mean, there's a lot of research out there, and physicians simply do not know it. They simply do not know it. And it's not just about prevention. I mean, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, living well and eating well in terms of preventing disease, but now we know that nutrition is actually powerful treatment, particularly in certain conditions, can be very powerful treatment, can be more powerful than the drugs and procedures that we currently use. So while we learn all about the drugs and procedures, we really have almost no knowledge or understanding from formal training about actually using food as medicine. And that's really the, you know, that's it, specifically if I was going to put something in there, I'd have a whole rotation about using food as medicine, you know, what foods work and why, and how to help people change their diet. You know, it's behavior change is a big part of this. Behavior change is a huge part of this. And we don't get much of that either. You know, it's still sort of the doctor just dispenses the instructions and walks out of the room. And there's a whole other aspect of the patients actually, you know, adopting new behaviors that, you know, the medical profession could help with, but we don't do that very well.
Let's now take a look at your own experience. Did at any time in your life you face any illness that the mainstream medical model or protocols were not able to adequately and redress and reverse your condition, or have you always been healthy, and in which case then give us the ideas that motivated you to look at changing lifestyle, including diet, to keep people healthy and or to reverse disease?
I've been very fortunate to have been healthy. I'm now 39, approaching 40 years old, and I haven't had any major health scares myself. I've been fortunate. You know, a lot of the reasons why I've become so interested and enamored with food has to do with my father, who you mentioned in the introduction, T. Colin Campbell. Back around the year 2000, I got an invitation from him and my mom to help him write a book for the public about his life's work in diet, nutrition, and cancer. And over the next 4 years, I got really deep into that project. I did a tremendous amount of work in writing and editing and research in the library research. You know, I really got my eyes opened, so to speak, on how powerful food is. And I sort of really began in earnest changing my choices at that time. I had already been, I should mention that, you know, I had already been eating a more plant-based diet through about high school age, you know, adolescence and in mid to late teens. My parents, like most people, I sort of unconsciously or mindlessly developed, you know, eating patterns and eating habits. And in my case, my family sort of became mostly vegetarian by the time I was in high school. And then we slowly got rid of all the meat, you know, even from the chicken fried rice and the little bits here and there that we had. We got rid of all of it, certainly by the time I was at college. And then I consumed a ton of cheese and a ton of dairy. And then I started working on the China study in my early 20s. And then that was the end of the dairy. And I've continued to work on my diet from there, you know, get rid of, it's not just about animal foods, it's also about getting rid of processed foods, the added fats, the added sugars, the refined flours, and I've been working on you know, ever since on sort of improving my diet and lifestyle. But I guess personally I kind of came into this just learning from those people around me in a rather mindless way, and then I became conscious of why those choices were made and adopted it as my own passion and interest.
Let's now go to what I believe is one of the most important areas of discussion, that is people that you've personally counseled, the protocols you've given, what they are, Because remember, a lot of people listening right now are in the position that your patients are in, and they'd like guidance, as specific as you can be. That's how important it is for them, because they don't know where to start. And then show us the outcome. How many of these conditions, which conditions were you actually able to reverse?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, you know, it's been an incredible journey. We have a program at the U of R, just to give you the background a bit, that actually has individual and group programs for patients who are already diagnosed with illness to actually attempt to treat their illness using diet and lifestyle. And it's been an eye-opening experience. It's been wonderful. One thing I should say is that, you know, this type of doctor visit, if you want to call it that, is very different. You can't do this. I'm a family medicine trained physician. I'm a board certified family doctor. And you know, in all my traditional family medicine practice experience, spending 3 minutes with someone talking about diet and lifestyle just does not work. It's not enough time. So you got to take, it takes a long time to kind of explain the answers to the questions you asked. But I really, you have to understand, you know, everybody's a bit different in terms of their medical problems, their medical background. You know, some people do need a slightly different prescription, maybe, depending on their medical problems. Certainly people with bowel surgery or, you know, food intolerances, that type of thing, actually need slightly different prescriptions. But in general, you know, after taking a very involved medical history, I spend quite a bit of time talking about our food guide at the University of Rochester. And the basic idea here is that you can eat abundantly foods that are whole plant foods that are unaltered for the most part. So think about what nature provided or what you find in out in nature at the farmer's market or in the produce section, you know, things that have what the plant grew, you know, all components of what the plant grew are on the yes list. So non-starchy vegetables, those are all your salad vegetables. Starchy vegetables, those are your potatoes, your sweet corn, sweet potatoes, things like quinoa. And then you have whole grains, legumes, and then as well as all spices, all fruits, whole fruits, I should say, not dried or juiced or blended, but whole fruits, and, of course, chia seed, some spices and some chia seed and flaxseed. And there's a whole world of foods that I just mentioned there that people can sort of learn how to cook, and you can eat those abundantly without restriction or counting calories or carbs or anything like that. Then we go through the no list, and this is basically animal foods and processed foods. And then we have a maybe list, and this is where, you know, there's some nuance, and it depends on someone's starting point and their goals, but things like the high-fat plants, nuts, which are healthy, but from a behavioral point of view, they can get people into some problems if they overeat them in terms of weight. And nuts and seeds, coconut and avocado fall in that category. Some of the natural added sweeteners, you know, are sort of maybe foods, and some of the isolated protein or stuff like gluten or tofu are also in the maybe foods. That gives you a nutshell of what our food guide is, and then it's really about adapting that to each individual person. And I've had tremendous success with people with metabolic problems, particularly diabetes. We had an article in our local paper here, the major paper here in Rochester, New York, about some of our success with diabetics. And so I've seen a lot of diabetics from that time, and I can't tell you how satisfying it is in diabetes to use this type of approach. You know, people come into the office and they sit there. I kind of go through this explanation, and we have a discussion, and you can kind of tell behind their look at me. They're kind of like, you know, is this guy nuts? Is he crazy? I've been working to avoid sweet corn for like 20 years. You know, I haven't had a potato in 10 years, you know, because everyone has told me not to eat these things. And I'm sitting here saying, yeah, you can eat these things. Go ahead and eat them every night, you know. And if people who jump in have just tremendous success. They really do. I mean, everybody, it's variable. Of course, all people are going to vary in terms of their response, but I just got a text message this morning, literally, from a gentleman who I've been seeing for about 4 months, and he came in, and he was at a point, he literally was planning to die within about 5 years, because the diabetes had gotten to a point where he was talked to a specialist, and the prospect of either dialysis or complete kidney failure leading to requiring dialysis or kidney transplant was on the horizon in the next 5 years. On a boatload of medication, he was on over 220 units of insulin total between his long-acting and short-acting insulin. He was very much overweight, had a touch of fatty liver, and on a lot of high blood pressure, a lot of medications. And he jumped in with his wife, which was very important. He jumped in both feet, absolutely, wholly, totally followed everything to a T, made exceptional changes, and has had absolutely exceptional results. He's down about 50 pounds, and looking at his lab work, literally for the first time since the hospital system has had electronic records, which is about 8 years from inpatient hospital care, for about 8 years, for the first time, he has normal kidney function. His kidney function has totally, the decline has totally reversed. He has normal kidney function. His hemoglobin A1C is now out of the diabetes range and into the just above the normal range, dropped it from about 7.5 to 6.1. He went from 220 units of insulin at the beginning. Within 4 days, he was down to about 70 units of insulin within 4 days and getting blood sugars better than he had ever gotten in the past couple years. He went from planning to die within 5 years to wondering how he was going to spend his retirement money with all the time he has left. I cannot describe to you how dramatic. I mean, words can't do it justice for this individual, and he did it with food. He did it with food and exercise. I mean, he was exercising before. He continues to exercise at a very nice level. And what we've done is we've treated the cause of the problem. We've treated the cause of the problem. And it's more powerful than all the patchwork medications and procedures that we might do for people. And it's just enormously gratifying. I mean, so the metabolic problems, diabetes, oftentimes high blood pressure, not always, but oftentimes high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity, weight, these things respond dramatically to diet. They respond dramatically to diet. And there's certainly other conditions that also respond to diet. We don't know exactly what conditions will respond to diet. We need more research and how strongly they respond. But certainly, man, I'll tell you, I've just seen too many turnarounds now, too many stories like that to think that, we shouldn't be telling everybody about this.
And what has been your success with people suffering from, let's say, depression and anxiety disorders?
Well, I think that is variable. Many people are affected by things outside of their food in terms of their mental health, of course. We live in a very isolated world. I really think that isolation, depression, loneliness is really a great epidemic among in our culture that is largely untreated. And it's systemic. It's in the structure of our lives. It goes deep into how we interact with our institutions and with other people and how our society is set up now. And it's a big problem, and I can change my food. I mean, I can tell you some interesting anecdotes of people, for example, noticing some mood disturbances and anxiety that get better when they change their diet. And I don't know why that is. It's not necessarily true of everyone. I had a guy in one of our group programs kind of come up to me a few weeks in, and he seemed almost a little sheepish or something. I was like, oh, no, what's he going to tell me? And he said, have you ever had anybody, say that their mood was better? And I said, yeah, sometimes that happens. And he said, he went on to say that, every morning, usually late morning, he used to find himself get really grumpy, really, really short-tempered, and irritable, and people noticed it. I mean, he was kind of mean and angry, And he said, that's gotten much, much better. That's gotten much, much better now. I don't feel that way anymore. People seem to have noticed. People are telling me that, you know, people seem to have noticed. I had another patient who had just a global sense of anxiety, you know, every day, and sort of shortness and anxiety. And people noticed. She seemed brighter. She seemed more energetic. She seemed happier. And she told me that. People are telling me, I feel better. And I think there's a part of that that's related to, you know, when people are eating really processed junk, you know, they tend to have these high blood sugar swings and peaks and valleys in their blood sugars. And when we start feeding them, or they start eating, feeding themselves high fiber foods, like starting their day off with a big bowl of oatmeal and fruit, then they don't get that swing up and down, and that can certainly change mood. That can certainly change energy, and there's also some evidence that depression and anxiety are related to systemic inflammation in your body, and certainly this diet tends to be anti-inflammatory. So potentially that could help with depression and anxiety as well. But I certainly would not claim that, you know, changing your diet is going to fix be a sure bet to fix depression and anxiety, because there are so many things outside of nutrition that impact depression and anxiety and our mental health.
Lastly, what has been your success with people who are overweight?
I've had good success with that. People are variable, again, as in everything. I've had patients lose over 100 pounds. Interestingly, the caterer that we work with in our program, I guess she's developed a little bit of, sort of a reputation because she has just such an exceptional story. She was a critical care nurse and in her 20s was exceptionally overweight, in the upper 200 pounds. And she read the China study. She read the Campbell plan. She changed her diet overnight dramatically. And now, over the several years of time, she has now lost about 140, 150 pounds, and she has become so enamored with this idea. You know, she's cooking this food. People saw the changes in her. They asked her what she was doing. She shared some of her food, and she's a great cook. And soon she was, like, preparing food for, you know, half a dozen people, her family, friends, and then another half a dozen people, her family, friends. And she realized this is a business. And so she started a business that's just grown and done tremendously well. She has an exceptional personal story. And, I've seen people with massive weight loss like that, and people with more moderate weight loss, you know, people working 70 pounds. That's pretty massive, too. But, you know, 70, 90, 100 pounds, this gentleman 50 pounds in the past 4 months. But not everybody. You know, some people really struggle to lose weight. And I'm pretty convinced that we do have certain dispositions. This is, I think, a pretty safe statement. We all have different dispositions. There are some people who hold really, really, really want to hold on to their weight. I mean, they got to really be strict, much more strict than the 30-year-old, you know, the guy who might just drop weight, you know, very easily. So it's highly individual, but generally, I think anybody can lose weight on this plan, but some people have to be really quite strict.
I appreciate you taking the time to share with us today. I'm sure that this has given a good basic motivation and overview of what people are capable of doing. And keep up the good work. We appreciate you being on with us.
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Dr. Colin Campbell, my guest. We're going to take a break and come back with our next guest. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. Now we're going to where we have individuals, clinicians, who have background in helping people change their lifestyle. And, of course, a very important part of our lifestyle is our diet, and as well as exercising and stress management. It doesn't take a lot to help redirect a person away from unhealthy habits to healthy habits. The person has to have some kind of a support system, and historically, we never thought of physicians as being that person that would guide us through the different challenges in our lives. More often than not, they would give a diagnosis and give us some prescription and then monitor the outcome of that. This person's different, from Yakima, Washington. And we have on the phone right now Dr. Yami, that's Y-A-M-I, Cazorla Lancaster. Now, she is a pediatrician, and she is also the founder and chief pediatrician of Nourish Wellness in Yakima, Washington. And she also has helped found Veggies Fit Kids and Vegetarians of Yakima. She's deeply committed to making Yakima one of the healthiest cities in America. And she also completed the T. Colin Campbell Foundation's plant-based nutrition program as well. And she is a Food for Life instructor through the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. She also is an adjunct faculty member at the University of Washington School of Medicine, and also she received additional degrees, her medical degree from the University of North Texas Health Science Center. She earned two masters, one in public health and clinical research and education. And she's done a lot of publications, including a contributor to the book Rethink Food, 100 Doctors Can't Be Wrong. And her websites are nourishyakima.com and veggiefitkids.com. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Gary. It's an honor and a privilege.
Well, you are in a unique position because you're able to influence parents and children at the beginning of this whole life process, where you can help guide them in the choices they make. The problem is right now we have an epidemic of adult diabetes in children, heart disease in children, obesity or being overweight in children, even arthritis in children and teens. And as a result of that, what historically, for someone of my generation, the baby boomers, most kids were fit. We were outside. We ran. We had meals with our families. We were understanding that there was a relationship between food and health and exercise and health. And a lot of that, unfortunately, is not there today. So take us on a journey of what you find to be the most important challenges that you have faced and how you help overcome those. And add into that mix some personal stories of kids that you have helped reverse their disease, where they would virtually be considered cured of their earlier conditions, that can then inspire, hopefully, some parents listening that maybe there is hope for their children as well. The forum is yours.
Okay. Well, absolutely. And thank you so much for introducing that so well, because the issues that we're facing today really are multifactorial, but the main problem is that we live in a natural environment. We have around us very easy access to foods that are high in calorie density, full of salt, sugar, and fat, as well as chemicals and additives. We have exposure to media, television, video games, in which kids are becoming more sedentary. And then on top of that, we also have a lot more stress on children that they didn't used to have in the past. And I'm talking about mental stress, because obviously as humans, we've gone through different stages in, you know, human evolution, where maybe we had more physical stresses and more harsh environment. But now kids are being exposed to things that are making them very anxious and depressed, and they are learning habits to soothe themselves. And one of those habits that I see recurrently in my practice is overeating and even binge eating in little kids as early as 7, 8, and 9 years old. So in my practice, I see all of this, and I try to integrate it into an individualized whole person approach, because because I know personally, even though I have, as you listed, all these degrees and all this education, and I know exactly what is optimal for me and my body to eat, I myself can fall into patterns that are not aligned with my goals and may not be as good for me physically. So how can I expect some of my families that are low income, maybe low education, some of the moms working two jobs may only be sleeping 4 or 5 hours a night. They're feeling a lot of stress, maybe depression, loneliness. I can't expect them to go from where they are at that point to getting automatically this optimal lifestyle with a perfect diet and, like, you know, sleep habits and stress management. So I take it step by step, and I don't expect to see changes overnight in some of my families, but I will tell you that the first thing that I start to work on is the diet. And once we start making changes little by little in the diet, I can see radical improvement. One of the most common things that children see pediatricians for in the United States is abdominal pain and constipation. So that's one of my big passions. And honestly, the reason I love treating that so well is because with diet, most kids can be cured of their constipation and abdominal pain. And one of the first things I tackle is dairy. Children these days are exposed to so much dairy in food, not just milk they're drinking. Milk seems to be going down. Kids aren't drinking milk per se as much as they're having cheese sticks. They're eating ice cream. They're having cheese on their sandwiches. So they're getting it all throughout the day. And some of these kids have no clue that that dairy that they're consuming is causing their abdominal pain and possibly their constipation as well. So I just start little by little, and I start making changes to the diet. And that's one of the main things that I've had success with is the chronic abdominal pain and constipation. But another thing that a lot of parents may not realize is children that suffer from chronic allergies and asthma, diet actually plays a big role in that too. And I've had some success, especially with eczema as well, because we call that the allergic triad. So allergies, asthma, and eczema is the allergic triad. And there have been cases where changing the diet provides big relief to these children. So the first thing I focus on is diet, but there might be some families that have a really good diet in place, and then we need to start looking at other things in the lifestyle. Most kids actually, even though I talked about children being sedentary, before they get to junior high, most children move a lot. Once they start getting into junior high, that's when we start seeing that they're getting more sedentary. And if we don't change those habits by high school, they're pretty much couch potatoes. So it's really important to foster that physical activity in children and make sure that we are making it easy for them to move around. One thing that I talk to parents and encourage them to do is make their household environment conducive to children moving naturally. So, you know, get rid of all that crystal china on decoration, make space on the floor so that they can run around and jump around. We have a mini trampoline for my children in the living room so that if they are watching a show, they can jump on the trampoline, they can run back and forth. And I, as a parent, try to tolerate some of that movement and activity and noise because I know that that fosters that habit of movement. They don't get used to just sitting in one place for an hour or two at a time. So that's kind of the first steps that I take. And as far as success stories, like I said, I don't try to get these dramatic overnight changes, but I have seen in families a lot of improvement in a child's quality of life because their constipation is cured or relieved, their asthma is better, their allergies are better, because those are the little things that really affect a child's quality of life. I also teach Food for Life classes, and so I have the privilege of working out in the community and working not just with children, but also adults. And in adults, you may see a more dramatic change because they have had disease for longer, they're able to verbalize a little bit better that they don't feel well. And in that case, I have seen some more dramatic recoveries that are very interesting. In one of my first classes that I taught, actually, I had a woman that was engaged, and her father-in-law came for the wedding. And a week prior to him coming to visit, he had been diagnosed with prostate cancer and had a PSA of 53. They, after taking my class, changed over to a plant-based diet. Each of them lost about 20 pounds. They were feeling great. So whenever her father-in-law came over, they told him, hey, you know, this is the way we eat, and this is what we're going to cook while you're here. And he was like, okay, no problem. I'll eat what you eat. Well, while he was there, he lost 13 pounds. He was there for 5 weeks at their house. He lost 13 pounds. He had to stop some of his medications because he was on some diuretics, and those are water pills, basically, because he had so much swelling. But he, when he changed his diet at their house, he was reducing so much of that swelling that it was giving him muscle cramps, so he had to stop some of those water pills and, you know, was feeling really good. When he went back to his home country, they repeated his PSA, and it was down to 1.7 with no other changes besides the change in his diet. The plan was after the wedding, he was going to go back to get chemotherapy and a prostatectomy. So they were actually going to remove his prostate. When they repeated his PSA, the doctor said, we no longer have to do chemo. We're not going to take away your prostate. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And he was so happy with the changes. He lived alone, so they were able to get help to have somebody come in and cook for him so that he can continue to eat this way. And he was just thrilled and happy. So that's one of the most dramatic stories I've had, and it's what keeps me going. But, of course, lots of stories of people losing weight. I've had a coaching client who his blood pressure was 200s over 100s, didn't want to go on any more medication, changed to a plant-based diet. He's off all medications and now has normal blood pressure and a normal cholesterol. That wasn't his primary motivation, though. His primary motivation was the blood pressure. And you just hear these stories again and again and again from changes in diet.
If you were to look at the average child's diet, what would be your dirty dozen? And then what would be your healing and health-promoting dozen?
So by dirty dozen, do you mean the things that they're commonly eating right now?
Yes.
Well, I joke around that here in Yakima, one of the major food groups is hot Cheetos. And I hear that from people of other countries. There may be something along those lines. But kids here, they get into the habit of eating a lot of fried processed foods like chips, cookies, candies. I'm not a fan of dairy, and kids are consuming dairy in a lot of different forms. And processed foods, the processed bread-like substances, all of those things. And one of the main problems with the diet of children in the United States is that it's extremely low in fiber. They're hardly ever touching a fresh fruit or vegetable. And we know from studies of the diets of Americans that we're consuming 5% or less of our total calories from fresh fruits and vegetables. When you look at the chart, vegetables actually includes a bigger piece of that, but most of that is fried potatoes, which I would not consider a health-promoting food. So what kids really are eating right now is a very low-fiber diet that is high in salt, sugar, oil, very processed, lots of additives, often lots of chemicals, artificial food dyes, all of that. So that's what they are eating in general. What I want them to eat is fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, and nuts and seeds. And I don't think that children need to be eating like 100% whole foods, but if we can even just start to shift a little bit and start eating more whole foods, more fruits and vegetables, it's going to go a long way in helping prevent disease and potentially reverse disease in some of these children that we're starting to see the disease processes starting.
Where do you have the greatest resistance? for example, if a parent wanted to get their kid off soft drinks, which are loaded with phosphoric acid and caffeine, high fructose corn syrup, and maybe over to a tomato juice or a V8 juice or a apple juice, grapefruit juice, orange juice. These are easy to get, not expensive, and are measurably different, but a lot of people resist it. So is the resistance coming from the parent or the child or both?
Both, but it depends on the age. If you have a 2-year-old that's already drinking Mountain Dew, that has been a decision that's been made by the parent or whoever the caregiver in the household is. That 2-year-old cannot go out to the store and buy a soft drink. So that control is completely in the parent. And you could stop right now. You can stop today. And the first thing you need to do is stop buying those foods, because not only are they hazardous and harmful to your child, but they're harmful to you as well. So that for the younger child that is school age, isn't yet purchasing any of their own food, it's going to be 100% in the parents and the grandparents and all the caregivers in that household. Once a child starts to get a little bit older, there are some kids that walk to and from school, and that's one of the things that we need to address in our country too, is these routes, safe routes for children, not just as far as physical safety, but also there shouldn't be a bunch of convenience stores in between the home and the school where they can easily stop in and buy a Mountain Dew and Hot Cheetos, you know? So at that point, of course, we know that these drinks are addictive, especially the combination between artificial sweeteners and caffeine is highly addictive to the human brain. So it might be hard for a little kid that's been used to having that all the time to stop right away. And then I need to discuss that with the child and the parent. But I also see personally, so my preferred drink, and I just filmed a video for Veggie Fit Kids yesterday on this, is water. Water is going to be the most health promoting. So my goal eventually is to get kids primarily drinking water. Caffeine, I feel, is not a substance for children at all. I consider that a drug, and I don't want children to be on it. And, of course, artificial sweeteners, we're hearing more and more about how it disrupts the gut microbiome, and it just causes a lot of problems. I really would prefer that children not be on those as well. So eventually, the goal, ultimate goal, is going to be getting to water. And if you have a small child that's not yet purchasing any of their own food, isn't getting it elsewhere, then you have the control. For the older child, it's going to be stopping the parents from buying it, first of all, and then finding ways that we can speak to the child about making different choices.
My final question deals with the type of illnesses we're seeing today that historically, at least in the last 75 years, was rare, like asthma. Mm-hmm. It's endemic in children today, inner ear infections, bedwetting, even with young teens, the lack of attention, and also so many kids being diagnosed with ADD and ADHD, as if somehow this is a legitimate new epidemic that's infecting people at the genetic level. Well, there is no such thing as a legitimate epidemic at the DNA level. So give us your perspective of what's going on where kids are being overly medicated. Many kids now, it's completely normal for them to be on 2 or 3 different medications, including very powerful antipsychotic or antidepressive medications.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I am seeing some of that definitely, and it's sad and it's frightening. And I have different perspectives on different disease processes. Again, most of these things I feel are multifactorial. So there's, I don't think, just one thing that we can point our finger to and put the blame on. It's not that simple, unfortunately. As far as things like asthma, allergies, eczema, I do feel that a lot of that is both some genetic predisposition, but also the influence of our environment. And we know that not only what we're putting in our bodies is becoming more processed, more laden with chemicals, but also our outer environment as far as pollution. And in Yakima, I love where I live. It's beautiful, but we're an agricultural valley. So there's a lot of pesticides that are in the air. Things get stuck inside the valley. And so I do see a lot of allergies. But I think that there is an association between these environmental allergens and insults that we get and our diet. So everything that we can do to optimize what we're eating, what we're drinking, what we have around us is going to help. And that's why even if we can't change the fact that you're allergic to ragweed or something like that, if you are eating a more health-promoting diet, that allergy may not trigger your symptoms as bad. And that's what I want people to understand, that your diet can have a huge impact on how you feel and how your disease manifests when it comes to those illnesses.
But
as far as – oh, go ahead.
Why – again, that – I appreciate your answer, but if you could address, as a pediatrician, as someone who's in the front lines of the battle against childhood obesity and inner ear infections and allergies and asthma, you have to have some ideas or at least some hypothesis as to why we're having this epidemic at this time when other countries do not have that. France does not have that. Italy does not have it. I've traveled all over the world. I do not see, and as a PhD in human nutrition and public health science, I don't see this when I travel, and I'm looking for it. I see a completely different lifestyle, but this is something uniquely American at this point. Someone I know very well is Dr. Vandana Shiva. She's one of the world's great environmentalists, and she lives in India, and she has an organic teaching farm up in the northern part of the India near the Himalayas. And she told me that once the Indian population became more educated and began to earn more money, they began to abandon the historical healthy Indian diet. And now you have an epidemic of diabetes and obesity and heart disease in people in their 20s and 30s who are no longer in the poor caste, they're in the educated. The same is also true in China. So it's worldwide, this phenomenon of all the sugar, all the salt, all the processed food, all the meats in different forms. And now if you look at a commercial, and last night when I was watching the different news reports, there was one commercial, and it talked about how much you're getting for $2.50. You're not getting one, you're getting two rolls and and these, of course, are pure carbohydrate, pure sugar. You're getting cheese, eggs, and beef patty, two of them. So that's an enormous amount of concentrated calories. It's all highly processed. It doesn't have quality fibers and nutrients in it. And yet, because of the constant promotion, $2.50, $2.50, two hamburgers, you know, look where we're at today. And it's so easy to become indoctrinated. So that's unfortunate. But I want to thank you for all the good work you're doing out there and trying to help make a community, Yakima, into the healthiest city in America. How many people live in Yakima?
We have about 100,000 in Yakima and the surrounding areas.
Good. Have you experienced any of the wildfires that are happening up in your state?
Oh, it's horrible. Today, I couldn't even see the sun on the way into work. That's how thick the smoke is.
Wow. All right. Well, all the best to you, Yami, and thank you for being on with us today.
Thank you, Gary. I so appreciate it.
Dr. Yami Kazlora Lancaster from Yakima, that's Y-A-K-I-M-A, Washington, and her websites are nourishyakima.com and veggiefitkids.com. Have a nice day.